There's an edge, you gotta pop, get into it, yo. Pop out with a truck, get into it, yo. If you go to church, I said get into it, yo. I just she ain't gotta put up, fuck it, get into it, yo. And I said I just gotta pop, get into it, yo. Pop out with a truck, get into it, yo. If you go to church, get into it, yo. If she ain't gotta put up, fuck it, get into it, yo. Yeah, you just wanna party, you just wanna lap dance, you just wanna pop up on these pants like you the Batman, you just wanna ball up in the designer with your best.
Hi, my name is Pablo, and this is the Back Catalog Podcast with Pablo the Don. The song you just heard is Get Into It, Ya by Doja Cat. Welcome back to the Back Catalog Podcast. Unfortunately, this week I had to provide my own intro and outro because Instagram decided to delete all of the voice notes that you guys sent me in the DMs on the Back Catalog Podcast page. So, if you would like to be part of the intro, please record a voice note of yourself saying the Back Catalog Podcast with Pablo the Don. You can say it in any voice you would like, and you can send it to the Back Catalog Pod Instagram at Back Catalog Pod, catalog spelled the American way, C-A-T-A-L-O-G. This week I'm going to be giving some thoughts on the biggest album releases of the month of June. This month was packed in terms of music, so I really tried to pick albums that represent my eclectic taste in music while also picking some fan favorites. I also allowed you guys to pick an album for me to review via TikTok, and it's going to be a surprise, but it's going to be the very last album I review in this episode. There's also a playlist linked in the description of this podcast with some of my favorite tracks from these albums and some other releases this June. So if I missed an album, don't be upset. Just check my TikTok at Pablo the Don, all one word, because some albums I just decided to review on TikTok only and not include in this episode. Every album has a ranking on a scale of 1 to 10, and I'm also going to tell you my favorite track from within. So to start this month off, I think I have to talk about probably the most anticipated album of the month, which was Tyler, the Creator's Call Me If You Get Lost. This album is Tyler's most painfully aware album to date. Not only does he lament over his past transgressions that caused him to be proverbially canceled on songs like Manifesto and Massa, but also how he's grown and matured as the years have gone by while also being a hyper-visible figure. This album feels way more like a mixtape in that it features the mixtape pioneer DJ Drama, which if you don't know who DJ Drama is or the Gangsta Grillz series, throw it in your Google machine. It is one of the most important moments in music history was DJ Drama and everything he went through with mixtape and specifically the Gangsta Grillz tagline. After accomplishing this adds to a long list of goals that Tyler tweeted originally about wanting to accomplish in his early days of public life that includes things like having his own music festival and also winning a Grammy. As always, Tyler is a master of his tone and texture and using his uniquely deep voice to provide layers to his stories. He also manages to pull out standout verses from NBA YoungBoy, Lil Uzi Vert, and Lil Wayne, all of which feel like they are in prime condition on this project. Tyler's project also reminded everyone of just how skilled of a rapper that he is and has always been, and despite his playful and goofy and silly bars, he still packs a punch with each line he throws out. But throughout this entire album, Tyler literally won't let us forget that he's rich now, and the constant theme of traveling throughout the world is brought up throughout many of the tracks, including the lead single Lumberjack. Tyler has always managed to balance his unique outlook on life and music with appealing to a more mainstream audience, which I believe is a testament to him proving that any style he goes for is and will become mainstream. This is easily his most well-rounded and put-together project thus far, which I thought would be difficult to top considering Igor and Flower Boy are both damn near perfect. But if this project proved nothing else, it's that Tyler is unafraid to move in new directions and completely dominate them. Though his unpredictability in his youth might have been seen as his greatest downfall, I think now it's probably his greatest strength. This is an 8 out of 10 album for me, and definitely a contender personally for album of the year. My favorite track on this thing was probably Wilshire or Manifesto. All right, staying within the hip hop realm, I wanted to talk about the collaboration project between Lil Baby and Lil Durk on The Voice of the Heroes. And to be honest, I'm not really afraid to admit that I am not the biggest Lil Baby fan, and I've always just kept an eye on Lil Durk, but he's never been in the upper echelon of my consciousness. When Baby hopped on the scene alongside Gunna, I saw two signature elements of Young Thug in two separate people, but as time progressed, he has absolutely grown on me, and I think it all starts with his 2020 single, The Bigger Picture. Baby easily could have been grouped with the mumble rappers before that single, but with that release, He was able to truly show his range and ability as a legitimate MC with something to say. As for Dirk, I've always been keeping an eye on Dirk, like I said earlier. He was part of the pioneering sound of Chicago drill music as a teenager in the 2010s and has been a pretty consistent artist since his first release, even though somehow this man manages to keep his underground status and appeal. So while on paper alone, I thought this was going to be a horrible pair, they actually work and flow well together rather seamlessly. Both of their voices provide a unique sound despite technically having what I feel is the same vocal range. Dirk, as always, is a master of auto-tune and using it to his advantage widely on this project. It helps add extra textures to his vocals at key moments in each song. Baby, on the other hand, keeps his signature drone and flatter raps with perfectly placed moments of higher inflections and punctuation. This project is unimaginably long, and it makes it so much cloudier musically and thematically. But the biggest low point I'd have to say is the album sequencing. It truly feels like the songs were placed in the order that they were completed in the studio, instead of giving it a shakeup and making it fit to a well-thought-out narrative. I would love to see more from the duo in the future, though, but definitely on a more concise project with a tighter concept. And my favorite song from this album is definitely 2040, but I'm gonna have to give this a 6.5 out of 10. Seriously, y'all know I detest albums that are over 12, 13 songs. It's unnecessary. Get to the point. There's no point longer than 15. I promise that. All right, switching gears a little bit, I wanted to dive more into indie rock. So the next project I picked was actually a singer-songwriter indie rock project from Lucy Dacus called Home Video. All right, 3 years on from her last album and a collab album with Julian Baker and Phoebe Bridgers under the Boy Genius moniker, Lucy Dacus is back with her indie rock third album, Home Video. After a very long wait due to what surely has to be the pandemic, the early singles of this project got me especially excited, specifically song VBS, which was released back in May. This album oftentimes is an uncomfortable look into Lucy's childhood in Richmond, Virginia. Lucy discusses her discovery of her sexuality, going to Bible camp, and even examines how she would kill a lover's father on the album's spacious bare first single, Thump. The key to this record, as any Lucy Dacus record, is the songwriting. It is a trip inside the inquisitive mind of a 26-year-old, thinking back on the moments that shaped her life, albeit sometimes quite embarrassing. Each song hosts vivid, astute observations of what Lucy remembers from her childhood, sometimes taking a comical jab at just how childish she actually was. Specifically on the song VBS, which details her time at a vacation Bible school, and her stoner boyfriend is featured in it, who writes horribly funny poetry and smokes a lot of weed. Instrumentally, it's very stripped down and sometimes quite bland, but this album fits the aesthetic of Lucy that she's created around herself and her music. I feel as though these personal narratives are what keep me coming back to listen to Lucy, because not only am I intrigued by her life, but also the relatability between us two. I mean, I too went to vacation Bible school before, and I also have guided a partner while they went to meet their abusive parent. If you couldn't tell, VBS is absolutely my favorite song. I think this album is pretty solid for her and probably my favorite in behind Phoebe Bridgers' Punisher of last year, out of the Boy Genius 3 that just released. Not perfect, but it's solid. I'm giving this one a 7 out of 10. Next, I wanted to dive more into the lane I think we're honestly missing in music. I made a TikTok about it last week, talking about pop music. And so with that, I wanted to dive into something that I thought could potentially help bring that back. And so I picked Troubled Paradise by Slater. To me, Slater is of a special breed, and she's single-handedly filling the void that music has been missing for the better half of the last 10 years. Pure pop music. Slater has dared to fill the empty space that artists like Britney Spears and Lady Gaga made iconic in the 2000s. Slater's debut album is an edgy, provocative plunge into 2021's own version of pop music. With her McBling-era aesthetic, Slater has brought that energy into her newest project, a high-voltage LP. Slater jam-packs this thing with in-your-face banger after banger on the first half. She even throws in a little bit of Vogue in there with my favorite track, Doghouse. What Slater evokes with this project is the simplicity of pop music and the effortless, we don't care, let's just take shots and party energy infused in every single track. Even on tracks that are way more toned down, like Serial Killer, Slater keeps it simple with easily memorable and quotable lines that repeat and get stuck in your head. Though sometimes the production can sound drowned out and chaotic to the point of almost incomprehension, I almost want to say that's the point. To forget what's playing and just have fun to a killer beat and someone saying anything. The sex-heavy track Thrubzilla is another standout where Slater details her A-rated fellatio skills, but truthfully, it's a masterpiece. And though the back half of the album both calms down and takes a steep decline in quality and impressiveness, Slater effortlessly balances the hyperpop sounds of 2021 with the traditional pop tropes of the 2000s and encourages everyone to just have one big party. Though nowhere near perfect, with some shaky vocal performances and some of the instrumentals being far too busy, this album is an amazing peek into the pop music we could have yet again. So I'm giving this one a 7 out of 10. Next, I wanted to review a album from a classic band that has had a major impact on my life and the way that I consume music. So I picked Path of Wellness by Sleater-Kinney. After 25 years of being a trio, Sleater-Kinney is back with their first album without their drummer, Janet Weiss, and it's just okay. This by far is the grooviest I've ever heard a Sleater-Kinney record be, but the band is truly reinventing itself as the members themselves shift and take different forms. Written in the throes of the pandemic, this album, both in writing and sound, is craving for a bit of stability, which would only make sense given the aforementioned Global Bastard, their home city of Portland being the backdrop of some of the most violent police and protester clashes, and the Oregon Hills fires of last year. Though this album is definitely a step in a different and lovely direction, this album definitely has some less than desirable moments, specifically the vocal performance of Method. Though this by no means is a soft record, both women have tamed their voices to more so cascade over the instrumentals rather than their typical wailing over the instrumentals, and that's something I've come to love as I've listened to this more and more. This album definitely suffers more from underdeveloped ideas rather than taking steps backwards. I hope the women continue to explore this 60s and 70s groove with their hints of psychedelic rock and R&B, because it's a vibe I could really, really use in my life. I'm gonna have to give this one a 6 out of 10. Next, I wanted to talk about probably one of the most anticipated albums of the year from one of the coolest artists I've ever discovered. I think I discovered her around a year ago off of someone's Twitch stream, and I've been hooked ever since. And I think this is probably one of her best efforts to date. So let's talk about Jubilee by Japanese Breakfast. Japanese Breakfast might have been the indie world's best-kept secret until Jubilee came out this month. Chock full of ambition, Michelle Zahner's third full-length LP is an album full of thematic and sonic experimentation right from the first note. Though zestful as fuck, this album was so carefully crafted for its listeners, from the harmonies to the liberal use of intoxicating synths and crashing cymbals on the album opener Paprika. Zahner is loud, boastful, and colorful all throughout this project. My favorite song, Be Sweet, is an upbeat 80s inspired cut about pining for reassurance from a significant other after a big fight. Zahner doesn't just talk about love though. She offers thoughtful stories from the perspective of others, like this cut, Savage Good Boy, where the narrator is an avowed capitalist who knows he will escape the earth once it starts to go to shit because of his access to wealth. This is really an incredibly composed album full of thoughtful words and ideas and no short of amazing instrumentals. Zahner might be a New York Times best-selling author, but her lust for words plus her background in DIY music collides on this project to bring a tastefully put together package of sheer goodness. This is a 9 out of 10, and honestly, it will probably be somewhere in my top 10 of albums this year. It is so good. I am so appreciative of this woman and just the way she loves creating music and the way she has created music in a way that keeps me so intrigued and always coming back and wanting more. Keeping in the lane of experimentating on new projects, I wanted to talk about arguably one of the biggest groups that have burst onto the scene in the last 2 years alone. So let's talk about Nine by Salt. Back with their third album in just under a year, Salt channels healing energy throughout their latest album, Nine. And contrary to their last two untitled releases, Nine takes the pain and anger that we were presented on the aforementioned titles and uses it to heal through children's chants and nursery rhyme patterns. Taking a step away from the hip-hop and soul-based music they were making, Salt opts for Caribbean and African-inspired beats that go hand-in-hand with their chants. This to me is clearly some great ass protest music. Easily quotable and repeatable, specifically The Pain Is Real and The Real Is Pain found on the song Fear. Salt reckons with alcoholism and drug use on the painstakingly beautiful track titled Alcohol to discuss the slippery slope of substance abuse as a way to escape the life of a black person living in England. It's hard to imagine how Salt is continuously able to put out music that is this high of quality in such a short amount of time, but they do it again and again and again. While keeping their identities in the shadows, Salt has created an entirely new subset of music that both attest to the pain and triumph of what it's like to be black in the world and not just one country. On the song You From London, Lil Sims provides one of my favorite verses to show Americans that the divide between us and Brits are not as stark when you're black. Though it's brash and in your face in terms of calling out Americans for their individualistic worldview on oppression, I think it does its job and forces everyone to consider things from outside their own perspective. Salt knocks it out of the park again with the spacey and transcendent project. This is an 8.5 out of 10. Probably my most requested album to talk about is obviously Doja Cat's Blend Her. So let's talk about it. Preferences, please do not send me no hate. I love Doja Cat and I think she's a great artist. This album simply just didn't do it for me though. The highly anticipated third album, Doja Cat, is here, and it's eerily similar to 2019's Hot Pink, and I mean that in the way that it's a blend of hip-hop and hip-hop that shows her versatility. When Kiss Me More came out, it was such a healthy balance of rap and pop, and provided a sound that was both fresh but familiar to Doja. With a killer verse from SZA, it was a perfect single to start the era with. However, what we received after that was a blend of both well-thought-out and placed pop songs with some less-than-amazing trap songs. Get Into It, Yeah features one of the most intriguing and fun vocal performances from Doja. The Nicki Minaj homage on the track is cute, and I think this is a really fun bop. It's probably my favorite on the entire album, aside from the single Kiss Me More. Woman is a great album opener, which calls on the Afrobeat influences, and I think that Afrobeats is a genre that Doja could do over and over again, and I don't think I would ever get tired of it. I would like to see more of this from her. While the features on this album are packed with some top 40 artists and some more hip-hop based folks, the Ariana collaboration was better in theory than I think execution, as there isn't a really clear distinction between their vocal performances or cadences. Also, they just collabed on Ariana's album and it wasn't really necessary. While the Weeknd feature was good, I don't think the song overall was the best. And the strongest feature definitely comes from JID on the trap cut Options. However, the only bright spot on Doja's end for the chorus. The only preview we got from this album was Ain't Shit, which I think was much better as the snippet than the actual song, especially that second pre-chorus where that vocal performance is more than shaky. I think on this album, Doja was fearless and tried things that we'd yet to see from her. While some of it were hits, I feel like it's comparable to Hot Pink in that the hits were phenomenal and the misses were way off base. The biggest miss on this album is absolutely its sequencing. Ending the album with Alone, which is a song about how solitude and getting to know yourself after a relationship is better than immediately searching for a new love, and then following it with Kiss Me More, which is a song that exactly does what its predecessor advises against it, was odd. Kiss Me More was such a great song and should have been placed somewhere in the first half of the project. I think Doja is still headed in a great direction, and I would love to see her explore more genres as she progresses. One thing about her is that she's going to experiment, and while I don't love every song in this album, I commend the fact that she is trying to at least bring some new energy to the pop and rap world, and I know eventually she's going to perfect this blend on a complete project. So I'm giving this a 6 out of 10. I already said my favorite song was Get Into It, Yeah, aside from Kiss Me More, which I think is still the song of the summer and probably one of the best singles of the year. The next one I want to talk about actually came from a recommendation from a couple of mutuals on TikTok. So shout out to y'all if y'all DM'd me and asked me to cover this. Thank you for bringing this to my attention. I don't even know how I went past this, but I'm really glad that y'all brought it back up. So I'm going to be talking about I Know I'm Funny, Haha by Faye Webster. After landing on Barack Obama's year-end list in 2020, Faye Webster is back with a cheeky look into a blossoming relationship on her fourth studio album, I Know I'm Funny, Haha. Though turning herself deprecation down ever so slightly since her last full-length LP, Webster explores a level of sincerity and irony that had yet to be seen in her music. Though I feel this album is much more rudimentary in terms of songwriting, This relaxed approach fits the edgy folk lounge music and soft rock vibe that this project is filled with. Webster examines the complexities of emotions and just how thin the line between lonely and lonesome. Two seemingly similar feelings can differ vastly on the cut both all the time. Even though Webster is straightforward in her delivery on this thing, there are so many layers to peel back and find deeper meaning for each listener. Though she does still find humor in life, this album perfectly navigates how certain words, feelings, and emotions can have multiple connotations, which take vulnerability to discover. By far my favorite track is the alt R&B cut A Dream with a Baseball Player. Details Webster's dream of falling in love with Atlanta Braves outfielder Robert Acuña Jr. Webster reels in all the youthful immaturity to construct an album that is both real and honest, but fun, and seeking to find the optimism in what can be some embarrassing adult situations. This is a lovely soft album that will definitely be in my rotation for a while. I'm giving this an 8.5 out of 10. And finally, the album that y'all picked on TikTok that won by 6 votes, Cinema by the Marías. This is the Marías' debut full-length album, and it's a bilingual alternative R&B bedroom pop ode to scoring film. Each song provides a soundscape to go along with a particular emotion so strong that the imagery used within the music only encourages listeners to construct their own scene to go along with the track. María does an amazing job switching between English and Spanish, but keeping her audience enthralled through instrumentals. This album sounds amazing at night when you want to have a slight groove in the background, and I thoroughly enjoy the duo's ability to flow through different ideas musically, including an amazing reggaeton-inspired track called Un Million. The album manages to keep a slight electronic feel to it throughout every idea that they decided to explore, and it really ties it into the modern 2021 sound. The vocal compressions on Un Million feel soft and warm, while also engulfing you at the same time. The album Closer features spoken word by María, which truly feels like a closing monologue to a coming-of-age film. The soft cabaret-esque drums and piano in the back makes it feel as though we are coming to a harmonious end to the film, and we're finally getting our happily ever after moment. This is really a phenomenal album, and I'm so happy that this won the TikTok vote. This for me was a 9 out of 10 and is definitely a group I will continue to explore as they release more music. I hope you guys enjoyed the June 2021 album review. I know I couldn't review everything, so make sure you check out Cautious Clay's Deadpan Love for an alt R&B and pop vibe, Hiatus Coyote's Mood Valiant for some good Australian-based soul music, and Fushi's Time Machine for some psychedelic pop and R&B. Please check those out, and also check out the playlist linked in the description box, and drop us a rating and review if you can. Make sure you follow me on Instagram at pablo.thedon. Make sure you follow the Back Catalog on Instagram at Back Catalog Pod. Catalog spelled the American way, CATALOG. Make sure you follow me on TikTok, Pablo the Don, all one word. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Back Catalog Podcast with Pablo the Don. And don't forget, if you want to be a part of the intros and outros, please send them my way.
You just wanna pop up on these pants like you the Batman. You just wanna ball up in designer with your best friends.